Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, probate specialist Elaine Byrne is here, ready to answer your questions about wills, inheritance and probate. And we've been getting lots of questions in, Elaine, as we always do. So let's get straight to it. But if you do want to send a question in to Elaine, she's back in a couple of weeks again. Todaycb at rte.ie is a good way to do it. It'll give you a little chance to think about it as you write that email down. Now, Elaine, we'll start with this first one. Fair deal rent is what this concerns. So this listener says, my father died last year and had been in a nursing home for 4 years up to then. So our listener moved into his house and paid a small monthly amount to the state. It was €350. I also paid for some repairs, etc., and generally kept the house in good nick as it had to be sold to repay revenue, the fair deal loan. I have been told I will owe revenue now as I lived there, underpaying the market rent. Is this true? And if so, how is the amount due calculated? I'm very worried about this. So Elaine, what can you tell us about our listeners' fears?
Okay, thanks Claire. So the listener's father died last year in 2022, and then prior to that he'd moved into the nursing home in 2018. So it's just not clear if the listener moved into the house in 2018 or last year. But so if we look at both scenarios, and the same principles will apply. So if the listener moved in 2018. So from the revenue perspective, there's a gift then from the listener's father to the listener. And the value of the gift then, it equates to the difference between the rent paid, which was the €350 per month, and the market rent. So say, for example, €2,000 per month. So that would come to just under €20,000 per annum. Now, the listener would be entitled to a small gift exemption of €3,000 per annum. So the taxable value of what he got then was €16,800. So Claire, we always mention our group thresholds. So a gift from a father to son or daughter is classified under the group A threshold. So it's currently €335,000. So the gift then, it's going to be well below the threshold, so there won't be any tax. So let's say the listener moved in last year. So again, there's a gift to the listener. So at this stage, the father has passed. So it's going to be a gift from the estate or a gift from whoever was left the house under the will. So let's just say that the listener's father left it to his partner. So then the group C threshold is applicable. So there might be a small amount of tax. So overall, so there could be some tax for our listener, but I think it's going to be relatively low.
Now, what about what the listener says about doing the little bits of work and keeping the house in good nick? Because it almost sounds like this person moved into the house to make sure the house was in good order.
Yes, that's actually a very good point, Claire. Yes. So the listener could say that that was consideration. So the value of the gift, say, was €16,800, but that he should deduct then, say, the repairs and the maintenance.
Yeah.
So that should bring it right down. So we might get to a point where there's no tax.
Okay. All right. So make sure you tot up
yes,
you spent and
fair.
The work that you did. All right. Let's move on to the next one. If my elderly uncle does not have a will and is not capable of making one at the moment due to dementia, is there any legal avenue I should pursue at this stage? I'm named as next of kin with his care facility. What does next of kin mean in legal terms? Is it only in effect while the person is alive? For example, could I instruct a funeral home when the time comes as next of kin, including paying costs from his estate? He's of very limited means, no property, no assets. Essentially, he set aside a small amount of money for his funeral. Now, next of kin is not power of attorney. That's the first thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, Claire. So next of kin, so it means someone who we would contact or who we would like to be contacted in case of an emergency. So the care facility would contact the listener on behalf of his uncle if an emergency arises. But from a legal point of view, next of kin, it just has no legal standing
at all.
Yeah.
OK, so what happens then when the time comes and a funeral has to be organised and bills have to be paid?
Yes. So I suppose if we make a will, we can name an executor. And I suppose one of the advantages is that that person, the executor, they can organise everything and they have legal authority to do that straight away. Now, look, that's a little help to our listener here because there isn't a will. So if there isn't a will, we're looking at the rules of intestacy and maybe a grant is taken out and the person's authority comes from that grant. Again, that's of little help to our listener because it's a small estate, so they're not going to go down the probate route. So I suppose ultimately I would think that when the time comes, the listener maybe runs the plans past maybe a closer relative. So, for example, if the uncle has a brother or a sister alive. But otherwise, you know, I think the family would likely think that, look, the uncle has named him as next of kin and he should be the person to make those decisions. So I think it'll work out, but maybe just run it by any closer relative.
But there's no way to formalise that, is there?
No.
You're just doing it by consent amongst the other family members.
Yes, but there's no legal standing.
Okay. All right. And this is a really simple one. Is it necessary to use a solicitor to make a will?
So no, Claire, no, it's not. So Section 78 of our Succession Act, so that tells us how to make a valid will. So a will should be in writing and it should be executed then in accordance with certain rules. So firstly, it should be signed at the foot or end thereof by the testator, so the person making the will. And also then the signature should be made or acknowledged by the testator in the presence of each of two or more witnesses present at the same time, and they must then sign their signature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that the listener should also bear in mind Section 82 of our Succession Act, and this provides that any bequest to a witness or a witness's spouse shall be utterly null and void. So that's important. I suppose... And look, I think the listener might say that I would say this, but the listener, I suppose, just might bear in mind that the cost of making a will with a solicitor, it is relatively modest. I suppose it's maybe a few hundred euro. And I suppose as against this, if there is an ambiguity concerning a will, maybe the wording of a bequest, or if the testator later develops dementia, so that at time of death, there's a concern regarding the person's capacity
yes.
at the time of making the will. The cost of an application to the probate officer or an application to the High Court or a full contest in the High Court, like it's going to be in the thousands, the tens of thousands upwards. Mm-hmm. So although I am probably biased, I would say it's a false economy.
You would say, and listen, we know you're a solicitor and this is your business, but you're saying that in the long run, it might just be worth spending the couple of hundred euros. But you have a choice. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You absolutely can do it yourself. Yeah.
All right. Now, here is a complicated one. We always have complicated ones when we talk about wills and probate. A woman who was the last in her family died. And after her death, it was established that a second cousin had paid a lot of attention to her in the year before she died, taking her out for meals and also driving her to a solicitor to make her will. In that will, she left a small farm to a neighbour and her money to the second cousin, the one who was going out for the meals. The woman had four first cousins who regularly visited her, but who were excluded from the will. They've no issue with the farm going to the neighbour, as the neighbours took care of her and the farm for many years. However, it was felt that the excessive pressure and influence that was exerted by the second cousin, with the lady claiming herself that she felt she had made a mistake before she died. The question is, do the four first cousins, they're all from the same family, have they any way of contesting this will?
Okay, well, I would think, look, it certainly seems to have been opportunistic on the part of this second cousin to have befriended the lady shortly before her passing and at a very vulnerable stage in her life. So the first cousins, they could consider contesting the grounds of undue influence, but it's really, really difficult to overturn a will on this basis because I suppose the main person has passed. So just from an evidential point of view, it's very difficult. Now, it is interesting that the lady herself felt that she had made a mistake. So I just wonder is there any record of this or any evidence that could be adduced to show that maybe she wasn't happy with the will?
Mm-hmm.
Also, and it mightn't be relevant here, but there is the doctrine of permissory or proprietary estoppel. And this is the idea that there was some kind of contract between the lady and the first cousin, so that they visited her and helped her on the understanding that she would bequeath her monies to them. Now, I don't think that this was the case.
Again, you'd need evidence of that, would you?
Exactly, yeah. Claire. Yeah. So, look, it's going to be an important consideration, the level of monies involved. If it's a small amount, it's probably not worthwhile, you know, doing anything. So I suppose overall, I would think that while it's very unpalatable, I really don't think that there's much that the first cousins can do.
You might just leave it. You might just be advising them to leave it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worth talking to somebody about it, maybe.
And yeah, maybe get an opinion on it.
Get an opinion.
And decide then, but take into account the hassle and the costs that there could be.
Okay, so your initial take on that is you might just have to leave it.
Yeah.
All right. My partner died 10 years ago, says this listener, and bequeathed his share of the house to me. His executor and the estate solicitors say they're happy to transfer the house to me, but they never do it despite years of requests. Is there any way I can force them to hand it over without incurring legal expenses myself? My own solicitors seem baffled on what to do next, since the estate solicitors always agree to act, but then they never do. And they're talking about getting counsel's advice, which will cost me more money. Can I not just get the paperwork myself, drive to the executor for his signature, then drive to the estate solicitors for their signatures? Or is there a way to make the executor pay for my legal expenses if he continues to sit on the fence? 10 years on, this is still dragging out.
Yes, this does seem a bit unbelievable. I actually think it's a really good idea on the part of the listener to go on a road trip. So all the executor has to do is just to sign a form of assent, assenting to the vesting of the property or the share of the property in the listener. The listener then just has to sign a form of application, applying to have the property vested in her name. The estate solicitor then just has to lodge both of those deeds, along with the original grant of probate, in the land registry or with the registry of deeds. And that is it.
Mm-hmm. But she's relying there on the estate solicitor to take the final step. And it doesn't seem as though they're interested, really.
Yeah. Now, and the listener, so she goes on to mention, say, counsel's advice. So this means getting a barrister's opinion. So again, this is going to add to costs. And I suppose in terms of recovery of costs, as you say, Claire, like this is going on 10 years, so all of the monies will have been distributed. So there's not going to be any pot of costs. So I think it will be very difficult to obtain any costs from the executor, that it would be the listener possibly footing the bill. But if going the legal route, I suppose the only way that it might work is if the listener really puts on pressure and really makes it clear that she will be applying for costs personally against the executor. Because, as you say, 10 years on, it's absolutely unreasonable that it's not long finished
it
at this stage.
Is. But you think that road trip is a
I
good idea?
I would go for the road trip, absolutely.
Okay, good advice there. Now, this one is about my uncle, says this listener, who's age 79 and is suffering with dementia and is in a nursing home. While he was in good health, he designated me to look after his finances and affairs in the event of him not being capable. He's a widower. He has no children or siblings. I recently discovered his will in his house. Everyone named in his will is deceased, apart from my mother, who is his sister-in-law. Given the fact that my mother is 85, and could pass away before him, what happens to his estate when he dies?
Okay, so I think maybe firstly, Claire, I suppose I'm conscious that we're discussing our listener's uncle's will, but in circumstances whereby the uncle isn't in a position to give his consent to the listener to look at the will, but anyhow, we leave that aside.
That's what should happen, is it? That the will shouldn't be really seen unless that person has given express permission.
Yes, because a will only takes effect on death. So up until my death, only I should be entitled to see my will unless I expressly authorise somebody else to see it. But if I have dementia, then I can't give that authority.
Okay.
But to address anyhow the question, so let's say that the uncle in his will bequeathed all of his property, let's say, to his sister X, his brother Y, and his sister-in-law, who is our listener's mother, we'll call her Z. So X and Y, they have predeceased, so they've passed. And then the listener's mother, Z, is still alive. So, Claire, we often mention joint tenants and tenants in common. So this is really important here, because if X, Y and Z, so if they were given the property as joint tenants, then the principle of survivorship would apply. So all would go to the survivor, who is Z. But I think it's far more likely that it would be left to the three as tenants in common. And the law here is really tricky. So what happens then is that the bequest to X and Y lapse and falls into the residue of the estate. Now, if the residue is to all three of them, then what happens is that those shares will pass in accordance with the rules of intestacy. So ultimately, what could happen is that there is a will and there probably is an executor, but the rules of intestacy will dictate how the estate is divided.
Okay, and I hope that helps that listener. And Elaine, thank you very much for taking all of those questions. Elaine Byrne, their probate specialist of Elaine Byrne Solicitors in Meath.